Hey, welcome back, everybody. Time once again for this journey we call Living Hope. A journey for those living with pancreatic cancer. Sharing the real-life stories of those really affected by this deadly disease and how they deal with it on a daily basis. And in this case, Roberta, how we might help keep this thing funded and keep the research alive here in a difficult time for research dollars. Right, Roberta?
It's very important that we do that. And today on Living Hope, we're welcoming back someone whose strength and spirit continues to inspire us, Rob Pacini. Did I do it again?
You did. Pacini. How many times have you been on the show here?
Yeah.
We'll just figure out. I'm just going to screw it up every time.
Panacci, a good Irish name, right?
Panacci, and I'm looking right at the thing, too, so that's even worse.
At least you knew you screwed it up.
I did, but as soon as it came out of my mouth.
Just don't call me late for dinner.
That's
you know what? My dad used to say that all the time, so that's good. Yeah. Anyway, I'm so sorry.
She really does it because now no one will ever forget you. She might, but no one else will forget your name. Robert Panacci.
There you go. Thank you for that correction, and I do it every time. Anyway, let's get back. Rob is a pancreatic cancer survivor, a passionate advocate, and one of the leaders behind Purple Stride Phoenix. His journey has now led him into a new chapter, launching a foundation and program focused on expanding access, innovation, and collaboration in the fight against pancreatic cancer. Rob, it's always such a joy to have you back and looking at everything you have to do. Purple Stride alone is a plateful, but now that you've added all this other sections to it, but we're happy to have you and thank you for continuing to do what you do and for inspiring us all and for giving me for always screwing up your name. So
you're absolutely fine. I'm always appreciative of the opportunity to come and speak to you guys, get the message out. As you mentioned, Purple Stride is right around the corner. It's April of 2026, but there's a lot of planning and a lot of effort that goes into that. Thank goodness for our volunteers. And we're looking for an even better year than we had last year. Yeah, it's definitely one of the things that's keeping me busy lately. We're just starting to get through some of the key planning of where we're going to be. And we're going to be at the Salt River Fields in Phoenix again on April 25th, Saturday, April 25th. And just looking forward to a great event. It's always amazing to me every time that community gets together because there is so much goodness in the crowd. People with their stories, there's survivors, there's families who are grieving or celebrating their loved ones who have been taken by this disease and raising that awareness. And to your point, especially now in such a difficult environment, it's become more important than ever.
For those who want to sign up or join Purple Stride Phoenix, is there a website they can go to?
Yeah, just go on to purplestride.org or the Pancreatic Cancer Action Network.org, and you can find your city, whatever city you reside in, how to sign up for that. There's lots of incentives for signing up, t-shirts for $100. We had it's not on anymore, but we recently had a bandana giveaway if you pledged a certain amount by a certain date. Yeah, pancreaticcanceractionnetwork.org or Purple Stride, phoenixpurplestride.org, and you can find everything you need there.
Yeah, I know it's probably pretty early still, and you maybe don't have it, but do you have a special guest speaker yet, or are you looking for something special?
Not yet. We usually have a good turnout of some very respected doctors in the community, as well as Nicole Kreitz, who is an AZ Family News host, usually joins us as well. But yeah, we always get some interesting people to speak, interesting people to show up. But usually it's really just the community that comes together and the smiles and kind of the good atmosphere that we try and put on.
Yeah, it's really a good event. And like I said, it is everybody coming together where you've lost somebody or you're fighting for somebody or somebody fighting a survivor. And it's always a great event. And I think Paul has a question, so I'll let him ask.
Somebody tweeted in and wants to know, where does the money go? That's a good question. Mm-hmm. Does it stay locally or does it go nationally?
So the Pancreatic Cancer Action Network, although based in California, it has 60 affiliate cities across the U.S. So the money is spread out amongst the cancer community in the U.S. across three important things. One is taking care of the community. PanCan does a great job of providing resources. They have a call-in center. If you have questions about the disease, questions about clinical trials, questions about what your family member might be going through, and provide support services that way. They also provide dollars to critical research ventures where there might be new therapies coming out, KRAS inhibitors. They work closely with Revolution Medicine to develop new therapies for people going through it. And one of the other great things they do is they advocate quite heavily with both the local and federal governments to ensure that there's funding around pancreatic cancer. PanCAN, I believe, was one of the first organizations to get the federal government to fund a lot of research behind the progress that we've made with pancreatic cancer. And that, I think, is important because sometimes we forget it's a smaller community compared to most cancers, but it is one of the deadliest, right? Only 13% survive 5 years. And I think about that number, and that's what sort of has driven my next venture, is when I think you're one of 13% of people who was able to survive this. So you've got to do more. There's got to be other things that you should be doing for the community, for the cancer community in general, to make it better. So yeah, PanCAN does a very good job of that. They're very highly rated as far as the charity goes in terms of the percentage of dollar that goes towards actual activities that support cancer patients and research.
Yeah, and also just to give a shout out, because Julie Fleischman, the CEO and president of PanCAN, is actually in Washington, D.C. today and has been there, I believe, all week to talk about funding. So just wanted to put that out there, that even though we may not be going back in person like we did or doing things the way we did, it's not forgotten. She's back there so many times doing the ask and making sure that we get the funding and not to cut. So thank you, Julie, for doing that. Yeah.
Yeah, Julie's a tremendous advocate and tough. She's tough on Washington when she's out there. She makes them understand what's necessary. And then she also works very closely with a lot of the other organizations, not only here in the U.S., but around the world, to ensure that the message is strong, that we're keeping up the pressure to find the research, get the support necessary behind this deadly disease.
Yeah, she does a great job. Like I said, she may be a small person in stature, but let me tell you, dynamite really does come in small packages, and she does a great job. So,
I've never met her personally, but I'm only 5'6 myself, so I can't say.
She's a little taller than me, but not much. But like I said, she really is a dynamo. We really appreciate everything she does.
Yeah.
So moving on to is there anything else, I'm sorry, you wanted to say about Purple Stride, or are you good there?
No, find the website, contact me. I'll give Paul my email address so that it can be in the notes, and I can help you out.
Great. Sounds good. And that's April 25th, 2026. Is that correct?
Yep.
Okay, good.
Yep.
So now, what's inspired you to create this new foundation, and what is the name of it, and how did you come up with that name?
This has been a remarkable journey for me, and this year has been a remarkable year. I can't believe we're already at the end of October and ready to finish it up. And I've been through so many different experiences, from actually going through pancreatic cancer, going through the treatment and surgery, watching my family go through that situation. And then after surgery, once I got some semblance of strength back, just wanting to forget about it all. Forget about pancreatic cancer, forget about cancer, forget I was sick, just move on and get on with my life. I had a lot more things that I needed to check off my list. During that time when I was trying to forget about it, I had a number of people reach out and say, hey, I know someone who has pancreatic cancer, or they've just been diagnosed. Can you talk to them? And started to just talk to a number of people and realized I couldn't stay quiet. I couldn't walk away from it. And that's when I joined PanCAN as a volunteer. I'm now the Phoenix affiliate chair, but at the time I was just a volunteer helping fold t-shirts, get the event ready. And that's when I got to experience this wonderful community of families and survivors and people who are willing to help, people who are willing to spread the word, come out and donate their time and their efforts to really bring this community together. And that to me was an amazing thing. That led to earlier at the beginning of the year, end of last year, beginning of the year, working, a venture capital company had reached out and wanted me to consult a bit on pancreatic cancer. They specifically focus on cancer, but they hadn't done anything around pancreatic. So we spun up a pancreatic cycle, and they're currently, I believe, in the second last stage of evaluation in terms of where they're going to invest. Bright new companies coming through. That in itself was an experience, because now experience it from the patient side. I experienced it from the community side, and now I was seeing it from the med tech and bioscience side, watching these brilliant researchers, doctors, lab technicians, people come together to try and focus on either specific therapies, to make chemotherapy easier, to make it more effective, to make it not necessary because they were developing something within early detection. And the exposure to that whole industry just left me breathless. Honestly, it was like a world that I had never thought to explore before, never had any interest in, and all of a sudden it was right in front of me. And that led to a lot of great conversations here within the Phoenix community with different doctors and oncologists and different companies who are working on these things, and the learning just became exponential. And then actually it was a memo earlier in the year that Julie had sent out, Julie Fleshman from PanCAN. And she had two important stats in there that said, one, 2 in 5 people will experience some form of cancer in their life. And that in 2025, an estimated 620,000 people were expected to die from some form of cancer. 620,000 people just in the U.S. And I remember that hitting me pretty significantly, and I opined on that for quite a while, to the point where I started to dig through NIH and NCI databases and other data, like our local state government databases, in terms of numbers. And I did that and said, yeah, we're estimated at 620,000 deaths. That's one death per minute from some form of cancer. Now, I started to go back, and I got back as far back as 2015 before I stopped. 2015, the number was 595,000. And increasingly kept getting close to that 600,000 up until about COVID. And the numbers got a little bit funny, still around the 600,000 mark, but they dipped a little bit. And I think that was more because of the data irregularities because of COVID. But then increasingly, so 620,000, I thought, there's all these bright, brilliant, beautiful people working on cancer, whether they be treating it, coming up with therapies and cures, and we're saving lives. Those people are saving lives. We're getting better. The mortality rates on most cancers, with the exception of pancreatic, are getting better. But then you start to calculate the dollars around it, and it's millions and billions, and then it gets to the trillions by the time you get to treatment, post-treatment, pre-treatment, research activities, dollars coming out of NIH, dollars coming out of NCI, and then all of a sudden, a significant portion of those dollars are slashed, and the community is left in kind of disarray, thinking, where are my research dollars coming from? Where is this brave new thing that I'm working on going to end up, because I can't fund it anymore? And it's not like I can just shut it down. I've got active research going on in a lab. You just don't switch it on and off. So I started to talk with different groups, different oncologists. How do we make this better? How do we rethink it? How do we decrease the dependency on the dollars coming from NIH and make more efficient these dollars that are coming into to research and venture companies, etc.? And I was reminded, I was in finance and re-engineering in my previous life, and I was reminded of something by William Deming that said, a bad system will beat a good person every time. So no matter how good you are at your work, and I've met some brilliant people, if you're in a bad system, you're still not going to win. There's going to be something that's going to stop you from achieving your highest levels. And I think that's where we are with cancer. And I look at it as a crisis, because 620,000 people, to me, that's an epidemic. And when you have the amount of resources going into it, both financially and brain power, and then you say, okay, now I'm losing the financial piece of it, and I'm potentially losing the brain power because people are seeking out different opportunities because they don't have funding where they want to be and what they want to do. The brain drain is real. People are going to Europe, they're going to Asia, they're going to anywhere that's going to help them move their progress further because they've lost funding here. After a lot of discussions with different foundations and other groups, I realized everybody's priorities are set. They're all doing their things very specifically focused on, and they were struggling for dollars as well. So I started to put together a small consortium of oncologists here in the city, a couple business leaders, and just some people in the know And we just having conversations on how do you make this better? How do you make it? How do you re-engineer it so that it's more effective? And I've had people say it is effective. We're saving more lives every year, but we're losing the same amount of lives every year. And 620,000 is significant. So after a lot of thinking through it, I said, you know what? I'm going to take a look at it and I'm going to create a consortium of these people, and I'm going to wrap it around a foundation and a incubator/accelerator type group that will evaluate companies sooner, better, upfront, understand if they really have a chance before they get a significant amount of funding thrown at them that just ends up wasted. Less than 4% of companies who get funding, who raise money to come forward with the cure, never make it past the regulatory bodies. And I am encouraged by some of the work being done at the FDA in terms and NIH now in terms of them taking a look at some different things. I think Grail just got a couple of exceptions, and there are other solutions that got some exceptions to fast track kind of their solutions. But I looked at the ecosystem in Phoenix and I said, okay, we've got great doctors, we've got great institutions, we've got transgenomic labs, we've got a vibrant medtech, biotech community. Why don't we take a look at if we build a different type of system, a more collaborative system where the end goal is not a profit, the end goal is to reduce mortality, the end goal is to get solutions to patients faster, the end goal is to increase clinical trials. We do a great job with clinical trials in the city, but we could do better. And overall, across the U.S., a small percentage of cancer patients actually use clinical trials, and that's difficult. And now I think I read the latest thing was that 25 hospitals, because of all the cuts that are going on, 25 hospitals across the U.S. are going to close by the end of the year. So that's less of a pool of patients that you could reach out to and see, do you want to try a clinical trial? What about patients who are eligible for right to try? Are we encouraging that? Taking a look at all the avenues to say, we have all the tools. We have everything we need right here. Is there a way that we can work together outside of our logos? And when I say our logos, all the hospitals have their own logos, all the pharmas have their own logos. And quite interestingly, people were supportive and started to build that out as a business plan, started to reach out to more people, get some advice, get some guidance on how to do this, because I've never worked in the medical field. I've always worked in finance. But applying that systems thinking approach, and everyone says systems thinking, you're just going to go and try and fix things. Everybody tries to fix things. And I don't think that's the problem. I think the real approach is to try and take a good look at where we're at. Because if you look at my algorithms changed forever now, and every day I'm getting at least 10 to 20 messages of the next great thing that's coming through and going to save cancer patients. And then when you dig into it, they're still 10 years away, or they're still $20 million away, or the glossy marketing looks fantastic. But then when you talk to a true research scientist, they say there's no way they're going to get that into a cell. That drug will never go into a cell. I said, yeah, but they've spent millions of dollars getting to this point. Right. And as soon as they get out of the animal testing and they go into FDA, it's going to fail when it gets to people. How do you stop it? You take a systems thinking approach. You understand truly where you are. You get real intelligent about the companies and the solutions that you're supporting. And you provide that kind of support. What I don't want is the consortium of doctors to be worried about raising money or the operational part of it. I want them focused on solutions. I want them focused on finding out whether a company is real. And when I say real, they are very real in terms of the money they spend and the work that they're doing. But are they real in terms of, do they have an actual shot at getting past FDA reasonably within the next 5 years? And then the Novi part of it will focus on the operational side and the funding side through donations, grants, reaching out to private families, philanthropy, others, to say, yeah, if we're going to be focused and that attentive to what we're doing, and we're going to get some of the best people to work on the best solutions, then maybe we can become the model here in Phoenix with all of the assets that we have, because the Phoenix MedTech community has built up such a, like I said, a really great ecosystem. How do we work together to take something like cancer? And I'm not saying, and I've had people comment saying, that's socialized medicine. I don't think so. Not in this case. In this case, this is direct task force that's focused on an epidemic that's killing 620,000 people. 40% of those are made up by pancreatic, colon, and lung cancer. So even if we focus on that and we create an ecosystem that can collaborate and work together and think about different ways of writing business deals so that everybody benefits, but the most important benefit is to the patient, then I think this has a shot. So it's an idea that people have told me, yeah, great idea, it's never going to happen. Great idea, it's going to take you years to get it to work. Yeah, I love the intention behind it, I'm not sure. To a small group that have said, yeah, I think we believe. And that's where I say we're going to turn hope into belief, right? Hope has to have a plan. We've talked about that before, right? I had hope when I had cancer. That hope would have been nothing if I didn't have a plan for my doctors, if I didn't have a plan for my family, if I didn't have a plan for what was going to happen if I didn't make it.
I'm going to interrupt for one second here and just say that hope has a plan is where we're going to have to leave it here today. That's a great line. Why go beyond that? Drop the mic right there. Hope has to have a plan. If people want to reach, that's okay. If people want to reach you about your plan, how do they find out more?
Right now we have our websites up. It's still in sort of soft launch mode, but you can take a look at the Novi Foundation for Cures.org. You can sign up for more information there, or you can reach out to me directly at rlpanacci, P-A-N-A-C-C-I, at gmail.com. And I'd be happy to answer any questions. And we can always use more brain power in the community as well.
I think because you did probably just gave us a little bit of the basics, but I did look at your website and there were some questions I had that I wanted to talk about. So we actually have to have you come back, because one of those things I wanted to know about was the five pillars. I think there's more here that we really need to dive into.
Let everybody dive in and get us digest a little bit, and then you can tear it apart piece by piece here.
Yeah, I think that's what we need to do is just give
I'll
us
come back next week.
Tomorrow. We've got another hour here.
I think we're probably pretty much booked up until at least January. So we may have to reset you up then. But again, thank you so much for sharing and doing something. And your leadership is really quite heartwarming that you've done something rather than just talk. So we really do appreciate it.
Because hope needs a plan. I never heard that. I'm not going to forget that one. That's a good one. Because
yes.
Hope can't be the plan. It's got to be more than hope. Starts with hope, but you got to have a plan.
Exactly. Yeah. So thank you for sharing that. Again, we will have you come back and talk more in depth, maybe dissect a little at a time, because there is a lot there that we weren't able to touch on but really want to. So thank you so much for your time and what you're doing. Really do appreciate it.
God bless you guys too for sharing the message. So
thank you. As long as you speak my name, I shall live forever is dedicated to Stu Jed, diagnosed in 2008 with stage 4 pancreatic cancer. Stu survived 8 years, and Stu's mantra was, pancreatic cancer is a diagnosis, it's not a death sentence.
There you have it, some words of wisdom today on Living Hope, our weekly journey designed to provide hope, inspiration, education, and a plan for those living with pancreatic cancer. We should add that into the tagline here. Sharing the real-life stories that's really affected and how they deal with it on a daily basis. And of course, as always, if you or anyone you know needs help in dealing with it, we suggest lots of places to call. We list them all the time. Let's shout out the one we shouted out today here. Patient Services at PanCAN. That's 877, the number 2, PANCAN, for the Pancreatic Cancer Action Network. And for the OC Talk Radio Network, I'm Paul Roberts, thanking you for joining us, hoping you'll come back, and by all means, share this with someone you love. A as we all share this journey called Living Hope, right here in Orange County's only community radio station, OC Talk Radio, streaming live from our studios here at the University of California, Irvine's Beale Blind Innovation Center.